Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Zachariah Hughes, filling in for Lori Townsend. Next week, the 29th legislative session will get underway, and legislators have been busy pre-filing pieces of legislation that they hope will become laws during the session. APRN's Juneau correspondent, Alexandra Gutierrez, joins us from the capital city. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi, Zach.
And my other guest is KSKA's Matsu Valley reporter, Ellen Lockyer. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, Zach.
Okay, Alexandra, I want to start with you. Lawmakers are filed another batch of bills this morning. What's the workload looking like so far?
Well, I mean, the first batch of bills is pretty standard in number. You know, we've gotten, you know, about 70, 80 bills filed at this point, which is not out of the ordinary. What's interesting is kind of how few big ticket items we're seeing in these bills. You know, in previous sessions, we've had bills to develop gas lines, to allow the development of the Kinnickerne Bridge to go forward. We didn't see any of that in the first batch, and we're not really seeing any of that in the second batch, except for a couple of bills from the minority. Today, the only really big ticket item that was filed was would create a law school and a medical school in Alaska as part of the University of Alaska system from Fairbanks Democrat Scott Kawasaki. Given the state of the budget, it's unlikely that a bill like that can really go forward. They've been tried in the past, and given that we're not seeing any money, given that we're seeing challenges facing the funding of other bills on of other buildings on campus, it seems that most of the bills are more small grain than that. You know, we saw today one bill from Representative Paul Seiden that would push back the sale, that could potentially push back the sale of marijuana concentrates a little bit, so there's more time to regulate them. There was also another bill that would tighten the state's public records law. But most of the bills so far don't really have any financial impact, especially if they want to have any chance of moving forward.
And do you expect that later on in the session we're going to get some of these larger bills, or really is this a more subdued legislative atmosphere that you think we're moving into with the budget landscape the way it is?
Well, subdued isn't the right word. There's definitely a lot of tension here given the state of the budget, but I don't think that we're really going to see any big spending. Leadership has said as much. If anything, the focus will be on cutting the budget when possible. Though, you know, there's once you get past the capital budget, there's really bigger challenges of trimming back the operating budget. Last month, Governor Bill Walker said that to his commissioners, you guys need to identify 5 to 8% cuts in your agencies, and that's you know, easier said than done. So it doesn't look like we'll be seeing any of the sort of big project type bills this session, with the exception of maybe discussion of how to advance a gas line further. Previously, there was talk of maybe going into a separate special session in the fall to focus solely on gas line legislation. We need to see what Governor Walker intends to do with the gas line before we can say that's a definite plan again.
Well, and you brought up the gas line. I'm curious, the sessions, Governor Bill Walker asked for those in gas line discussions not to be doing so behind closed doors with the end of the confidentiality agreements. Do you think that's going to hamper negotiations coming up?
Well, there are some legislators who think that. What you're talking about is last week, the governor removed three members of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation's board of directors. And he also said that he wants anyone who is taking part in this not to sign a confidentiality agreement. And so the confidentiality agreement, what it's supposed to do is allow the state to discuss certain aspects of gas line development, proprietary information, with Exxon, BP, ConocoPhillips, TransCanada, are the partners in the gas line, without that information becoming public. And this was kind of seen as a necessary component for the producers. And it's it kind of speaks to sort of the challenges of having a sort of public-private partnership like this. What the governor wants to do is have his deputy commissioner, Marty Rutherford, be the person to sign a confidentiality agreement. But everyone else conduct discussions in kind of a more open format. There have been questions from legislative leadership that about this. They think that it could potentially slow down the project, that it could make it more difficult to negotiate with the producers. But the governor's taking a hard line on this, saying, hey, we need to be transparent in this regard. So there's definitely some tension brewing there between the executive branch and the legislative branch in terms of one saying, hey, we need to be practical, we need to get this project going as quickly as possible, and this is how we do it, and the other side saying this isn't necessary.
Well, and just one last question I want to ask you on a similar note before we switch gears a little bit is that we've seen a lot of shakeups so far with unaffiliated Governor Walker's switching of department and administrative heads. Is that significant? Are those appointments significant?
What is kind of showing is how slow this process has been going for this current administration. The governor has, it's his prerogative to have his own appointees, have his own cabinet members. And if a lot of these changes had happened in the first couple of weeks of the administration, instead of 6 weeks in, you know, people would see it as part of just your standard administrative transition. But now that it's kind of happening, so close to session beginning, and with some of these people who were left over from the Parnell administration having served for a while, the story then becomes, you know, firings, essentially. This past week, Governor Walker removed the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, Pat Kemp, and he was a Parnell appointee, and the reasons given for that were that they weren't on the same page in terms of two major infrastructure projects, the Juneau Access Road, to build a road from Juneau closer to Skagway, extending the road, and then the Knik Arm Bridge. The governor had directed his commissioners to come up with memos on a few big projects and where they stand. Commissioner Kemp had defended these projects to a certain extent, warning that if we halt completion of them, we could be liable to federal penalties. The governor did not agree with that, and so Commissioner Kemp went. And there's still a few commissioner positions that haven't yet been filled that people are keeping an eye on. The position of Commerce Commissioner hasn't been filled. The position of Adjutant General of the National Guard has yet to be filled. So it's definitely been a slower transition than I think a lot of people expected coming into this.
Okay, thanks, Alex. And Ellen, I want to ask you, in regard to some of those larger projects, the Knik Arm Bridge, the Susitna-Watonna Dam, we've seen a lot of the brakes put on those, but I understand in the Mat-Su Valley there's still some stuff that's up for debate, and I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about that.
I did talk to the borough manager, John Moosey, on that topic about a week ago. Governor Walker has taken the Susitna-Watonna Dam and the Knik Arm Bridge and put them on hold for state funding for the time being. But he did not target the Port McKenzie Railroad Spur project, which has been going on for several years now. And the borough is behind the project. The borough is actually building the railroad spur. And the borough claims it is necessary for the economic growth of the borough and the entire state. Now, there are three LNG projects slated for the borough's Port McKenzie. One of those projects, Westpac, would deliver LNG to Fairbanks by rail. So that rail spur is necessary for the Westpac project to go forward. The borough needs $120 million to complete the rail spur job, which has been constructed in six stages, and it's about two-thirds complete. So Moosey did not give up hope that that money may be out there still because, as he said, these economic projects slated for the Port McKenzie area, some of them depend on this rail spur if to go forward at all, but the Westpac LNG project could save the state money because it competes with that state gas trucking plan from the North Slope to Fairbanks. So it will be up to the legislature to decide.
Okay, and I this is a little bit off topic from that, mm-hmm. but since the election in 2014 legalizing marijuana and the timetable that's been set out in February, new legal codes, and then about a year later we'll have a lot of the retail components and licensing coming online. Mm-hmm. But I gather a lot of municipalities around the state are beginning to test out different regulations and legislative means to control how that implementation moves forward. You were in the MATSU very recently, and I'm curious about the symposium that you sat in on and how the MATSU is looking to move forward with marijuana.
Well, last night, the four mayors, and they are the Matanuska, Susitna Borough Mayor, and then the mayors of the three cities, Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston, that are within the borough, sat down together with at a public forum. The public was invited, and quite a few people showed up. The chambers were full. And it was sort of a surprising climate to me anyway, the impassioned pro and con arguments for and against marijuana that dominated the before the election have toned down considerably. And it was a very, I think, a very business-oriented crowd showed up. Most of the comments were directed toward business regulations. Other than that, there was, you know, any number of suggestions as to how the borough could craft marijuana regulations for the borough, for the MATSU borough. So, for example, I mean, there were people calling for Alaska-only permits. You would have to show your Alaska residency to get a permit to grow or dispense or supply. There were people demanding perhaps a different regulations for hemp and different regulations for marijuana, recreational. Others wanted a different tax regime for medical marijuana as opposed to recreational marijuana. There was no one in the 2.5 hours I was there that stood up and condemned marijuana use. Virtually everyone who spoke had I keep saying entrepreneurial slant. Most of these people, some of them had already looked into starting businesses, had started businesses. A woman with a business called Midnight Greenery spoke up and was extremely explicit in what the regulations could be. And many called for regulations that would be flexible because, as one nurse said, we know so little about the properties of the different types of marijuana and how those properties affect different human maladies. So it was a really interesting and I thought highly informative conversation. Of course, the borough is gathering ideas for this legislation, also a proposed resolution that would create a marijuana advisory committee. The borough assembly will look at those pieces of legislation next week.
And earlier this week in Anchorage, we heard the assembly introduce a piece of regulation that would treat marijuana in public similar to alcohol or cigarettes, you know, beginning to lay out a groundwork for where public use can take place and then attaching a fine schedule to different violations. I'm curious if anything resembling regulations within the municipality's power came up yesterday.
No, that was probably conspicuous by its absence. There was very little talk about the official side, the law regulation side. Now, the borough does not have a police force, but Palmer and Wasilla have their own police forces. I don't believe Houston has a police force. So there's parts of the borough that the troopers cover, and there's parts of the borough that paid city police cover. So there would be overlaps or gaps in regulation. Again, Mayor DeVilbiss of the borough brought up the fact that, you know, the state law does not say whether it's an area-wide law that would be blanket everyone or not. And within the borough, there are area-wide laws which are good for everybody, and then there are individual city laws, and there's individual road service laws. It's very complicated. And I thought, to me, the outstanding takeaway from that whole forum was the business atmosphere. People were concerned about taxes, about insurance, about separating hemp from marijuana. One man spoke impassionedly about hemp as the future of agriculture, although I didn't see any farmers there.
Interesting. And we may come back to that in a little bit. But Alex, Alexander, while we've got you on the line, I do want to ask a couple more questions. It's a new governor, new budget landscape, and I'm curious what the tone is like in Juneau this session as it starts.
Well, I've been joking about how I want to get a button maker that and create buttons that say, you know, it's going to be an interesting session, because I don't think I've had a single conversation with a legislator, lobbyist, staffer where that phrase hasn't come up. And what they mean by that is we're looking at a situation where you've got a legislature that is controlled by Republicans. You have a new governor who doesn't have a party affiliation but has a Democratic lieutenant governor. And on top of it, we're looking at a multi-billion dollar budget shortfall with kind of obligatory marijuana legislation thrown in and questions about what the state is going to be doing with Medicaid expansion. So it's definitely feeling like the good times are over in terms of budget surplus. And I don't know, there was one moment this week where I went into one senator's office and he keeps on his chalkboard the daily price of a barrel of oil. And it hadn't been changed since last April. So on it said $110. Now we're looking at oil that is less than $50 a barrel. And, that's sobering for legislators that are used to sending projects home, that are used to being able to implement new legislation with some cost, because they just can't do that anymore.
Well, and on that note, we're getting ready for next week, the governor's State of the State address. And I gather this is the first time in a decade that the night afterwards he'll be delivering a State of the Budget address. Is that significant?
It is significant. The last time that we had a State of the Budget address was in 2006 during the Murkowski administration. And then the last time we had one before that was in 1998 under Tony Knowles. And what this kind of says is that we are in a dire enough fiscal situation, as the governor's office is starting to call it. They don't like the word crisis, that we really need to wrestle and talk about it. So it's unusual in that this is going to be spread out over two nights, with one of these speeches having a purely financial focus. And there was actually a little bit of a question of whether, this was going to happen as the governor expected. It took about a week to schedule it. Legislative leadership looked into how common this was, what the constitutional provisions governing this were, what the statutory requirements were, because there's especially some sort of question of why is this happening when we don't have a Governor Walker's budget formally released yet. Right now, the governor has a placeholder budget. It's the operating budget that Governor Sean Parnell had been planning to introduce. He offered that in December without any changes, without any endorsement, just to meet a deadline, and has said, we're working on our own budget that will be more focused on cuts that we plan to introduce by February 18th. When the new State of the Budget speech was first discussed, there was some question of, will the governor be dropping his budget around this time? And it doesn't look like that's the case. Yesterday, the governor's budget director, Pat Pitney, said that the administration will have essentially kind of target spending totals for each state agency set by that point, but we won't be getting any sort of granular detail on what where state spending will go.
So we shouldn't expect the governor to be rattling off line items next Thursday and filling in the blanks?
Not exactly, no.
And I'm curious when we will be able to expect a budget. I mean, is that coming up? Are we going to be waiting until later in the session? And is this an exceptional year for deciding how to spend state money?
Well, the governor has until February 18th to release his budget. The co-chairs of the Finance Committee would prefer that happen sooner rather than later. Once the legislature gavels in on Tuesday, the first Finance Committee meetings will be happening shortly thereafter. As with the start of any new legislature, a lot of the first couple of weeks is devoted to overviews, but there are subcommittees for each state agency that will be looking at what changes they want to make. So if they don't have the governor's template in front of them, they're just going to be going off of the previous operating budget, which could result in a little bit of back and forth between the legislature and the governor if his budget is not released soon.
Okay. And Alex, my last question for you is, what pieces of legislation are you keeping an eye on, and what's interesting to you this session?
Well, honestly, I mean, the most interesting thing is the budget. That controls everything. You know, you can't really pass legislation that costs money if you're in a time of cuts, if you're in a time of a major revenue shortfall. You know, that is really going to kind of guide everything that happens this session. I mean, also interesting is what the state is going to do with marijuana. That's an issue that got put in their lap that they wouldn't have necessarily wanted otherwise. But I think that kind of budget and bud are probably the two things that are, in some ways are going to take, we know will take a lot of time and attention this session.
Okay. Alex, thank you. And Ellen, I wanted to ask you, I'd heard that this is Alaska's year for soil, and I know that's a special interest of yours, and I'm curious about it.
Funny you should bring that up. We've been talking about grow operations. This is actually the United Nations Year of the Soil. 2015 is the Year of the Soil worldwide, and our folks over at the Natural Resources Conservation Council over there at USDA are getting behind this, and I think it's of interest to the gardeners out there, and they should check with the USDA website on this. Every month there will be a special theme for soil, how to conserve it, how to take care of it, how to fertilize it, because it is not a renewable resource.
Really?
Did you ever think of that?
I can't say I did. I didn't think the dirt underneath my feet was so precious.
Let's have a little more respect for the dirt underneath your feet, because it is holding up that building you're living in.
Think
of that.
And segueing from that for just a moment, there's been a lot of news about the Mexican consulate in Anchorage and some recent developments on that. I have to say, I'm not totally sure, but I know it's been something that you've been covering. Can you explain a little bit about
right.
that?
Right. Again, yesterday, the Mexican consulate in Anchorage did hold a special presser, and this would be for Mexican nationals born in Mexico with a Mexican birth certificate. And this is something the Mexican government is doing worldwide, because so many Mexicans live abroad from their native country. And this would allow a Mexican citizen to get a copy of his birth certificate for various reasons, passport, air travel, what have you, immigration status, which apparently has been pretty difficult to do until now. This new system they have, any Mexican can walk right into the consulate. They don't need an interview. They don't need an appointment. They can just go in and during consulate hours. With proper ID, they can, through a computer program, pull up a copy of that person's birth certificate. So that is an interesting innovation of interest. There's quite a few Mexicans living in Alaska now, and travel is a problem sometimes with them.
And you mentioned that it had been difficult in the past. Was that a bureaucratic hurdle? Was it political? What was the impetus to overhaul things and change it up?
I think all of the above, bureaucratic, maybe less computer savvy at some of the small towns. Also, many of the smaller Mexican villages, towns, you know, out in the rural areas, they are literally losing so many residents. Records keeping is not good. It's not up to date. So this has been a comprehensive plan by the Mexican government itself for not just the United States, but for all the world.
So okay. And in terms of events in the Matsu, a little bit closer to home than Mexico, what's on your radar? What's going on that we should be paying attention to? And what are you excited about?
Well, the future of hemp that people like Bruce Schulte with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation, Johnny Ellis, Senator Johnny Ellis, pre-filed a bill dealing with hemp as an agricultural product. So now we have to iron out what's legal, what's not legal, where it is legal. That's going to be worth watching. I think this railroad spur, the let us say the completion or not completion of the railroad spur, because so many big projects are hanging on it. Of course, we have the balance of, you know, state budget cuts. That will be obviously a big argument. We have a very strong Matanuska, Susitna, Borough contingent in Juneau. And so we'll see.
And with budget cuts, is there anything particularly sensitive in the MATSU that's up for cuts?
Well, of course, the Knik Arm Crossing. That will always be a sensitive issue, no matter what side you're on. And of course, a lot of people were hanging their hopes on the Susitna-Watonna Dam project. But of course, that would depend on federal. And so that may be just be pushed back for a few years. Who knows?
All right. Well, Ellen, thanks so much.
Thank you,
Zachary. Alex, thank you for joining us from Juneau. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Alaska Edition. I am Zachariah Hughes.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.